Sup, thrill seekers. I'm Dev.
And I'm Connor, and you're listening to Mass Hysteria.
And you're watching Disney Channel.
You wish.
Welcome or welcome back, thrill seekers, to a special
special
episode of Mass Hysteria. Do you know why it's special?
Because I have a head cold and probably be sniffling through all of this.
No, that's an added bonus. It's our 50th episode.
Oh my goodness, we're famous.
We've talked to each other over 50 times, which feels like too many times.
That feels like too many times.
No, it's also special because Connor has a lot of uncertainty in his life right now. He's studying for finals. He doesn't know what he's getting for Christmas. Like, there's just a lot of uncertainty.
I don't know what I'm getting from people for me for Christmas. I'm not getting anyone else anything.
So I was like, why not just add a little more to the pot? And I prepared this episode, and Connor has no idea what it's about. And so his reaction is going to be his genuine, unscripted reaction. Surprise, surprise, if you didn't know, we do usually script a large portion of our episodes. We make sure our facts are correct. We want to make sure that we are explaining things in the sequence that they happened. This one, though, while it is a crime, there's some, like, comical elements of it. So
excellent. We love Connor, a good comedy.
He doesn't even know.
Is this, like, a tragic comedy?
Yeah, so it starts with Connor Treehy sitting down in his finals for,
that's just for a horror film.
But, you know, if you love it, this format, let us know. If you hate it, keep it to yourself.
We don't want to hear from you. Your negativity is not for us. Karen.
My favorite meme ever is the one from America's Next Top Model with, like, Tyra Banks. You know, when she would, like, hold the model cards before she would get them out. And it'd be, like, me choosing which of my friends makes it into the next new year of my life.
Have you seen the new, or not the new, the memes that have been going around about the Marie Callender prize? Thanks, Marie Callender, for ruining Thanksgiving. And they're like, and then it's like, Sharon doesn't understand what I don't understand. I just cooked my pie and I took it out when the fire, when the alarm went off. Sharon, that was the fire alarm.
I love, I can tell you've been doing a lot of studying. You're definitely off Instagram and TikTok.
I'm off the grams, off the talks.
That should be a New Year's resolution. Make a talk for, like, use a talk for. Yeah,
we do have a talk. We just aren't good with our talk.
We need to figure out how to use it.
We're not that generation.
We are not. So, without further ado, welcome, thrill seekers, to the 50th episode of your favorite New England.
What would this be? Our golden anniversary?
I was going to say teenagers. We are well out of our teenage years. Our favorite New England duo.
On our golden anniversary.
Our golden anniversary. It's not out. if you, I don't even, I can't get anything with 50. But, so without further ado, Connor, if I told you what's something that everyone is frustrated by in December, what would you immediately think of?
Like, holiday expectations.
You're like in the right
and
realm.
Family, because there's just, like, so much going on.
Okay, it's getting a little too personal. So I was thinking the postal service, right?
Okay, yeah. No, that's very true, especially, like, the last couple years.
You go in to mail something, you're promised 3 days, it takes 10 days.
PSA, be nice to your postal service workers.
Don't get me wrong, they do the Lord's work.
They do the Lord's work, and they really have nothing to do with it.
They're definitely overworked, underappreciated. I mean, who can't relate to that? But the postal service, right? Everyone's used the postal service. It's not something that anyone is immune to having to go pick up their packages, go mail things off. Everyone has experienced a point in time where they're frustrated by the post office. Well, on August 14th, 1962, we're back to the 60s.
This was a few years before I was born.
Just a few years. We really need to do another 1800s episode so we can
talk
reference
about my dad.
Your dad. He's in the other room, so we have to talk quietly. We don't live at home, okay? Contrary to popular belief. So it started off as a regular day for the Postal Service in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Do you know this, where this is going at all?
I do not.
I love this. Okay.
I just know about Plymouth Rock. That's all I know.
Okay, yeah. Connor started taking his first history class this year. still hasn't taken geography. Throwback to my favorite episode.
I'm taking before 1500. Plymouth Rock doesn't exist yet. Thank you very much.
Okay, so this one mail truck in particular was doing rounds to collect post office money before heading up to Boston. It was a routine journey. It should have been really swift. Basically, they would collect the packages and the extra cash from like local postal services and then ship it all back up to Boston. So Verity Partington, which that is probably the coolest name I've ever heard.
Verity Partington.
Mm-hmm.
Is this Verity, a man or a woman?
A woman.
Hello, Ms. Partington.
She wrote an article for Medium, which Medium is a very underrated website, in my opinion. It's awesome. About this case crime series. And I use this as the main source. So check it out if you are interested in reading it, reading all the details. But now, because you are in the middle of finals, I decided we should take it to a quiz, a pop quiz.
Oh, I love a good quiz.
Which highway connects the Cape Towns to the rest of Massachusetts?
495? Oh my God.
So close, yet so far away.
I don't know how to drive.
Route 6?
Route 6, sure. I knew that. No.
Okay, well, okay.
We all know I've been to the Cape like 4 times in my life, honey.
We all know he struggles with geography.
That's like the part of Massachusetts that I don't go to.
Okay, well, I guess, yeah, Gloucester's not really in the Cape. That's where Connor loves to spend his free time. Anyway, around 8 p.m., Patrick Shana and William Barrett, who was the guard that would ride with Patrick, was like the postman, and then William Barrett would ride with him. They were coming up from Plymouth on their route up to Boston. So they had already collected all the cash and all the mail from the Cape area, and they were kind of perplexed because they saw a police officer in Plymouth who was flagging them down, and they're like, highway construction, this isn't 93. I'm just kidding. But if you don't get that reference, you've never driven on 93 anyway. So if there's anything though that Massachusetts is known for, it's detours and angry drivers. I've never met one of those.
You've never been one of
never
those.
Been I almost said I've Devin been one of those. Never been one of those. But assuming it was a detour, the two men were prepared to stop and talk to the officer. So they, because he was like flagging them down and not redirecting them, they slowed their truck, came to a halt. And as soon as that happened, two cars rushed on the left and the right side of them and boxed them in. And four men jumped out. So Shana and Barrett were tied up and they were thrown into the back of the vehicle. So these were very gentle robbers.
We love this.
The mail truck wove its way through all the traffic and it stopped a few times to drop off money at different locations before it finally stopped in Randolph. So the mail truck was eventually abandoned with two men left in the back, Shana and Barrett, and they were eventually freed and the truck was located on Route 128. Please, if I'm ever kidnapped, leave me anywhere except Route 128.
Route 128 is almost as bad as 93.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's worse because you can't get there from here.
Yeah.
There's one way in, one way out.
It's too narrow for my liking. But it became unclear how many robbers there actually were. The story got really distorted. The memories of each of the witnesses were becoming kind of fuzzy. And even stranger, the robbers were not wearing masks. So I think because of how quickly everything happened and how chaotic it was, the two men were really not able to provide details on what these robbers looked like.
Or so they say.
So they say. I wish it was that kind of story, but no, they actually do not know them.
Oops, sorry.
So if this seems strange to you, a postal truck robbery, you're probably in good company.
This is very old-fashioned. In the Wild West, they used to rob the mail, you know, the stagecoach that carried the mail. It always was...
I thought you hadn't gotten past 1500s yet.
Connor, the mail truck, the stagecoach would just go along and it would get held up.
And please don't share facts unless you know if they're true. Thank you.
Did you ever watch a Western?
No.
That's literally the premise of, like, every Western. The stagecoach gets held up.
Okay, someone pray for me for Christmas. But the game caught banks. Need more than
prayer.
Yeah, no kidding. Both ways, both of us. The Cape Cod banks, they only utilize this, like, quote-unquote common truck system for about 2 to 3 weeks, so they say, before this heist took place. And with Martha Stewart years from her fame, who provided insider trading secrets to these criminals about the system, we don't know. So up until then, armored trucks or bust was kind of the slogan, which I think it's weird. I couldn't find why they temporarily transitioned to using common trucks before this happened. Like, couldn't they see and realize that if they didn't have an armed truck, like a Brinks truck to transport money, that it would probably get targeted, but to each his own. Based on the witness information gathered, police believed that 5 men and 1 woman were involved. I don't know how they connected the woman, but aside from Shayna and Barrett, they were able to talk to some people who had traveled through the area at the same time, and they kind of pieced together, I guess, a layout of what happened and who could have potentially been involved. The woman was believed to have diverted traffic to help isolate the truck before the robbery.
Like, some might say her name was Devin Flanagan.
Some might say that, but I was years from joining the world, gracing the years world with my conception. I just had like a flashback to how I would direct traffic if I was conducting a robbery. I'm just kidding. Please don't take that seriously. I have no interest in conducting a robbery, especially when I'm sitting on all this money.
Exactly.
Just kidding. Please, no one rob us either. Okay. So the woman was believed to have been the traffic diversion, and help like isolate the truck like a couple of miles before they were eventually stopped. Barrett and Shayna were able to remember 2 names that they heard at the time, which was Tony and Buster, which are like pretty generic. Arthur's friend Buster was on the truck.
Okay.
This is how the PBS show came into.
I really never would have thought that Buster would do such a thing.
I know. Such a nice little bunny. How did he end up
Buster?
But yeah, so they weren't really able to, I guess, connect the dots on who it might be based on just the names alone. I also think they were kind of common names for the time. So Massachusetts needed help badly, so they called the Ghostbusters. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm
probably going to lose a bunch of listeners because of my bad jokes. Okay. To solve the crime. And this is a exact quote from the Medium article. Quote, it settled for Chief Postal Inspector Henry B. Montague, who was head of the nation's oldest investigating service. He had 99% conviction rate when it came to crimes involving the mail. I don't know how many crimes he solved, but enough to be 99% successful.
All it takes is 2.
And,
3.
Does anyone need a new friend for Christmas? I'm all about weighing mailing packages, even if they're they can't fit in a letter. Anyway, he flew straight to Boston to kind of take command of this situation. So it was very official. They really needed help. They had no idea what was going on. So originally it was believed to be the work of Albert Nussbaum and Bobby Wilcoxon, who were 2 bank robbers in the area. They had used like similar guns to these robbers that held up the truck. And so they were thinking, okay, well, based on the fact that the crimes demonstrated similar behavior, maybe there's a connection. Year after year starts to pass, and they really don't have any further leads. They eventually cleared Nussbaum and Wilcoxon, and so the case, I guess, essentially was starting to become cold. Rewards for up to $200,000 from the postmaster.
For the 60s? That's a lot of money.
Were offered for any information. The statute of limitations for robbery is 5 years. So, Connor, you're good from your high school escapades.
Thank God.
But with that deadline rapidly approaching,
the judge told me that those records would be expunged.
I'm just like picturing you, you know, and like you accidentally fall into a YouTube rabbit hole and you end up on like the Judge Judy side of YouTube.
Love her.
Connor pleading in front of the judge. It was just three candy bars and I was really hungry that day. But yeah, so I didn't actually know that the statute of limitations was 5 years, but with the deadline rapidly approaching, they were really close to 5 years. They decided at the last moment to charge five people, four men and one woman. The suspects were John Redjack Kelly, George W. Agiostelis. I'm really sorry. I tried to say it out loud. I tried to sound it out. That's the best I can do. Joseph C. Tripoli, Thomas R. Richards, and Patricia Diaferio. So the suspects were eventually released on a bail of $25,000 each, which was a poor decision, not necessarily because they are flight risks, but because the local gangs would then have access to these people again. And so Tripoli's home was searched. He was a janitor at the time when he was investigated by the police. They came to his house to record the serial numbers of the dollar bills that he had to try to trace them back to dollar bills. Jeez. That would have been in the truck, which is pretty, I guess, more sophisticated than I would have originally thought. But
I'm also like, just going back to this for a second, I'm really surprised that the statute of limitations is only 5 years, because mail stuff, like mail related crimes,
his aspirations for 2022
mail related crimes are a federal offense.
Yeah,
so it's weird that it's
everything
only...
males do
is everything men do is no, federal.
Yeah, I know, I don't know,
so this is just weird. Interesting. Okay, sorry, I'm off my rant. Okay.
So he took a polygraph, but he was really nervous the first time. He failed it, but he passed the second one. And so that didn't really help clear the air about what happened. The home of Red Jack was searched, and large amounts of cash, like the equivalent of thousands of dollars, were found in his house. And they located a firearm. He also had a bulletproof vest.
Seems a little sus.
A little sus. And a reputation for being involved in the Boston crime scene.
As do I.
Specifically money laundering.
As do I.
Yeah. So this is the Ozark in the 60s. But he claimed the police were even like, this is really sad, we're like harassing his cats. Because they would like storm into his house and like raid his stuff. And
my
the cats
would... are harassed.
Yeah, that would be me if I ever got, if the police ever came to
do
me.
Do not come in. Marina is not ready.
Marina's my cat's name.
She's in the bath.
She does take baths for anyone that's interested. Oatmeal baths. winter ashy season is upon us. So when his case was days away from going to trial, Red Jack never came home, which this is what I was saying about it's bad that the gangs had access to them. And he worked as...
What about his cats?
They were fed. I did follow up on the cats.
Okay.
He worked as an electrician, which he should have like gone out to work and come back on the truck, but he didn't, which made it seem kind of like he disappeared. So rumors began to circulate locally that he was killed to shut him up.
Oof.
So Tripoli had started a defamation suit versus the Boston Herald because, I mean, he, presuming he was innocent, as he says he was, his name was getting thrown away everywhere.
Right,
and
right.
Based on what happened to Red Jack, you can tell they're getting targeted.
Right.
So he claimed that he and others were self-proclaimed suspects because they never officially named. And they're serving sentences like that were self-imposed. But the jury found that the newspaper did not have malintent. They were just overeager reporters. So anyway, I thought that was interesting because I haven't found one where a case where they sued the Boston Herald. But Patricia was charged with being the woman who, quote, stood at a makeshift barricade at an exit ram, which on Route 3, our favorite route.
Oh my God.
To help divert northbound traffic off the highway about 4 miles up the road, end quote. This was from the Kentucky New Era piece about the case. And this is relevant because guess what they did in court? This is probably... We've talked about a lot of outrageous stuff, okay? This is probably one of the most outrageous things we've talked about in court, okay? Angus Perry was, I guess, this witness. He from the write-up about him, he seemed like he was, like, an established man in his community. Whatever he did, they labeled him as a credible witness, okay?
Okay.
And he claimed in front of the court that he had seen a woman diverting traffic. And he... listeners, bear with me. This is a very frustrating thing to
hear. I'm ready.
He claimed, oh, this actually, it couldn't have been Patricia, because the woman that I saw diverting traffic had much larger breasts. And he said that in court.
My God.
They made her stand in front of the entire jury
to show her
to
breasts.
The side. Like,
yeah, so, like, her breasts would protrude. Yeah,
to basically say, like, I do not have the size breasts that this man is, like, that the testimony is
claiming. Wow, that is some shoddy defense work.
Yeah, so, I don't even have any more comments after that. I read that and I was, like, my jaw dropped. Patricia's husband told the Kentucky New Era, quote, "We knew all along that the jury would clear her. The jury is wonderful, just wonderful. Also..." He didn't say this. This is end quote. They're a little bit pervy. A little bit pervy.
Like, oh yeah, those are not big boobs.
like, what? Oh, that happened God. In the 60s. That didn't happen in the 1500s, like you're reading.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I thought that was wild. So guess the value of the robbery. $1.5 million.
So they were just having people bop along from the Cape with $1.5 million.
So, like, all of the money in Massachusetts, which makes this a bigger robbery all right, than
U.S.
the Brinks.
Postal Service. I was trying to, you know, defend you, but this is kind of a...
Connor's going to FedEx to mail his Christmas packages.
I'm going to FedEx.
So, yeah, it's bigger than the Brinks robbery. Isn't that wild?
That is just wild.
A man driving with one guard in an unarmed truck.
You'll be fine. Drive fast.
Gets robbed by a gang of people that they, and this is the conclusion, they still, to this day, have no idea who did it.
Wow.
You're welcome. So,
if someone was $1.5 million richer and never get caught.
It was so weird. Connor's family bought a house the same year. but yeah, this concludes our epi called Male Hysteria. Just kidding. But if you weren't annoyed at my jokes, you're probably annoyed at the fact that there's no resolution. But I thought this was interesting. I was trying to see what are some of the most outrageous unsolved crimes. And this wild robbery story about a mail truck is still unsolved to this day.
Wild.
So what I'm asking, I guess, is I'm giving you the opportunity to confess, okay? The statute of limitations is
if you are close to, I don't know, if you were 20 in the 60s, what would you be today? You'd be 80. So if you're in your 80s, please come forward.
Write
and you're
to
a
us.
Listener. Yeah.
We have a Gmail if you are aware what that
we
is.
We could possibly provide you with a mailing address if you need to snail mail via the USPS.
If you need to write us a letter about the mail truck you robbed, we will get it in our mailbox. Okay, well, if I'm sure everyone listening can tell that we're tired. We wanted to do kind of a lighthearted one. We have some cool stuff coming up for the end of the year and some even cooler stuff for 2022. And everyone cross their fingers because Connor is starting his first round of finals, baby.
I'm just going to cry every night.
And until next week.
If I'm still here.
If Connor survives, if he doesn't fall asleep in a puddle of his own tears, we will be back with a new episode that's probably a little more serious. But we hope you guys have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.